A reminder that the only place to watch the best players in the game on Thursday and Friday mornings is on PGA Tour Live. It's only $39.99 annually. It's one of the best values in all of sports. Go to pgatour.com/live today and subscribe if you haven't already. What happens when you take Callaway's most successful fairway wood of all time and make it even more versatile and powerful? You get the new Steelhead XR. With a recontoured Hawkeye sole and supercharged face cup technology, Steelhead XR is longer and more versatile than ever. For more information and to check out the technology behind the new Steelhead XR, go to CallawayGolf.com. Callaway, the number one fairway wood in golf.
Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. As promised, we are going to break down my recent trip over to Scotland, a whole lot of info in to come. But first, want to talk to you guys a bit about how the trip started and want to give a shout out and thanks to my friends at Luggage Forward. Luggage Forward, you may be familiar with other companies that will deliver your clubs to different locations for you, but you probably didn't know Luggage Forward has been doing this exact thing since 2005. That's 12 years of experience in the business. They offer full money-back guarantee that your golf clubs will arrive to wherever you need them, as well as additional payment up to $500 if they somehow don't arrive. They are the cost leader for common trips such as Scotland and Ireland from the United States, and they ship all kinds of things for you. They'll ship your skis for you, all different kinds of equipment that you want to ship. I've used them. I actually didn't use them between one leg on this trip, and it cost me £90, about $110 in baggage fees just bringing my clubs from Scotland to Ireland. So for our listeners, for a limited time only, go to luggageforward.com/no laying up. Just check out the website, even if you don't have a trip coming up. I think you guys can learn a lot about how to get your clubs from location to location on your golf trips. For now, let's get to the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. Joined for the first time on this podcast, the host of the Scottish Golf Podcast, as well as a social media extraordinaire for the European Tour, the guy that helped me plan almost every step of the way, I think, on this recent Scotland trip that I did, Rue McDonald. Rude, how are you, man?
Yeah, good, thanks, Chris, and really looking forward to being on. Long-time listener, first-time podcaster with you today, so looking forward to it.
I was mostly just looking forward to, I just wanted you to say the word podcast in your accent on and you already have, so we've already accomplished that. But for those tuning in, I'm going to debrief my trip, but mostly I want this podcast to be focused kind of on helping you plan a Scotland golf extravaganza of your own. Spoiler alert, I'm going to be gushing like a little fanboy for the most part. This has been the lengthiest and best golf trip I've ever done. Rue, and like I mentioned before, Rue helped with almost every step of the way. There's some stories to be told, but at the same time, I want to fill in some details. And the purpose of this is also to be kind of evergreen and last forever. And some stories to be told, but I want to talk about, you know, transportation, courses to play, courses I played, what I thought of them, and also going to be kind of be leaning on you, Rue, to fill in on some other courses that maybe I didn't get to. But I'm not going to lie, there's not many courses in Scotland that I did not play in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, you did a good effort. We were just chatting before recording. You'll want to come back to Scotland, but I'm not sure there's a need for it. You've seen pretty much every corner of it. So I was away for the most part. So I was living through your Instagram feed like everybody else. So I'm looking forward to kind of hearing what you thought of every golf course as well.
I tried not to blow it up too much because people are just like going to hate me at this point. I mean, it was like 2 straight weeks of it. And I didn't get to the Ayrshire. How am I doing?
Yeah, that was butchered. Yeah, Ayrshire.
I haven't gotten there yet. That's next week. Looking forward to that. Going to be there with our promotion with Callaway and Visit Scotland, playing in the Pebble Beach, the Dundonald, the Scottish Pro Am, Scottish Open Pro Am that week, and then heading out to play Troon, Prestwick, and Turnberry as well. So those are not going to be included within this. Maybe debrief on those at a later time, but I arrived on around June 20th in Edinburgh, got in the car and just drove straight north. And the plan behind that was I was meeting up with a big group of people, which we'll get to kind of near the St. Andrews, Aberdeen area. We were meeting up in Aberdeen and playing a lot of golf in that area. I had time on my hands, so I came up 2 days earlier to head north to the Inverness area and see what everyone was talking about. Most of the reason up there was to go play Dornoch, but you had quite the suggestion for me on my course to start it off with.
Yeah, you know, that's a pretty special spot. I think if I was to pick one destination in Scotland, and we have five and you visited four of them, the Highlands, Aberdeen, St. Andrews, East Lothian and Ayrshire. The Highlands probably is sort of your stereotype scenery and backdrops, kind of wide open spaces, open roads, and some really good golf. And you played Castle Stewart and Royal Dornoch and Brora up there, and you know, three great golf courses. And I think Castle Stewart was a great first round for you. You know, open, wide open fairways, but a second shot golf course. And what was your general thoughts of that one? I think it's very underrated.
Yeah, so the first thing I was talking with Jeremy, who's the director of golf there, as I came off the course and said, man, this place reminds me of Kings Barnes. And I purposely did very little research on the golf course before going to go play it, because I feel like recently I've been over-researching courses and not leaving much of an element of surprise to them. And so I didn't really even know how new of a course it was, and I didn't know that I'm going to butcher the name, Mark... Parson, yeah, that's right. He was the co-architect at Kings Barnes. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. So I didn't know that at the time, and I walked off the course and said how much it reminded me of Kings Barnes, and he was like, "Well, yeah, it's the same guy." I was like, "Oh, that actually makes a lot of sense." But it helped. This day was 70 degrees Fahrenheit and shorts and short sleeves and perfect sun for almost the entire day. I zoomed around in like 2.5 hours and I hit the ball like almost perfect, as good as I can hit it. And so I had just the best possible day at Castle Stewart. And I think a lot of your experience on a golf course, and I've said this before in the past, it depends on the weather and how you play. So I had like all three things going there. The weather was great. I played great. And the golf course was just phenomenal. I felt like it was just very, the wind was definitely down, but I found it very friendly. And I know the European tour guys, they eat that place up when they go there for the Scottish Open, which I think they've had there maybe four times. Is that right? Am I saying that?
Yep, that's right. Last year, and actually listening to last week's episode, you hate Alex Norén, obviously. He won round there last year. So surprised you guys both like the same golf course. But yeah, he won, and then Phil won there. I think it's, you know, as I said, a really underrated golf course. I could see like a world match play type event there. It would be really strong, but and the welcome that you got there is just like any other welcome that, or you know, similar to anyone else that goes there. They really do try hard. They don't do too much, but they do enough. And I honestly put that in my top three in Scotland. It's just such a great place all round, and yeah, not a bad start to your trip.
Yeah, and I kept almost every place I went, I kept commenting, sometimes to myself, because I was playing by myself in some places. Well, first of all, I can't escape this Norén take that I just it's been butchered, like it's been so exaggerated. But anyways, let's stay focused.
You're talking to a European Tour employee here,
I know,
as well.
Man, I don't dislike Norén. I just think his rating is a bit inflated. That's the entire take. But anyway, yeah. I'm amazed at how different all of the golf courses are and the different types of links experiences you can get. So like for me, in my mindset, when I think of Scotland golf, I think of, I want to play the classic old courses, right? But you also get, you can mix in as a part of your trip, some newer amazing courses that are basically kind of built, if I may say, for like the American tourist. I mean, almost everywhere you go, they're relying, not exclusively, but big time on American tourists coming over to play their courses. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, 100%. In fact, Castle Stewart have no members. They have some corporate memberships, obviously just outside Inverness. So they have some small corporate memberships there. But apart from that, they're relying on the the visitor traffic. So you're paying close to £200 around there, but you are treated like a member for the day, that horrible cliche. But one thing I wanted to point out was the fact that they are literally next door to Inverness Airport. So for people that are looking to fly into Scotland, the flights are much better now, Edinburgh being the probably the most popular starting point and ending point on a trip. But Inverness is a great option if you want to go sort of via Amsterdam or like, you know, obviously you've done maybe, but obviously through London as well. So it's a good option for the start or end of a trip, Castle Stewart.
Yeah, and you could start it, you know, fly into Inverness, maybe you fly out of Edinburgh on the way out and just kind of cut off some travel. I didn't do it right. I flew into Edinburgh, just drove the 3 hours up from Inverness to Inverness, which wasn't too bad, but I could have done it better. But yeah, they're like 4 minutes from the Inverness airport or something like that. And I wish I'd have known that more, you know. I'm no longer living in Amsterdam. I could fly over and play the course and fly back in like a day. Like it sounds like the easiest possible day. But yeah, it's a phenomenal piece of land. I mean, you could just tell the vision of the, you know, it's a 3-story clubhouse there with just like a 180 view of the Moray Firth. Am I saying it right?
No, you're doing well. And the other thing I was going to point out was the fact that it's a Gil Hans design.
Yep.
So, along with Mark Parsons. So, I think anybody that you know, enjoys his work will obviously enjoy Castle Stewart. I think he's very proud of it himself. And you know, a lot of what he speaks to in his design is certainly evident at Castle Stewart.
Yeah, and I just in doing this. You know, and one of the questions we got, and we'll get to some questions later, just about the difference between Scotland and Ireland. I think we've talked about this even in the past, is how much golf there is in certain regions. Whereas some of the greatest hits in Ireland, you got to kind of drive a lot in between. Whereas here, and I was speaking with some members up at Dornoch about just how the importance of having several good golf courses close by is for like the tourism, basically for an entire city. And I want to ask you some questions about Cool Links up there in Dornoch, because I think you may know a thing or two about that. I forget if we talked about that, but we'll get there. But just that whole area between of Inverness, to be able to play Castle Stewart, Brora, Dornoch, and Nairn, which I didn't do in the first leg but went back to and absolutely loved it. It's such a great area, and I feel like it's just so underrated. And when people, you know, most people, myself included, before I started researching this trip, You know the names of these courses, but I don't know where they are on a map. I don't know how close they are to each other. So that's that whole region, and that's kind of the point of what I wanted to point out is, you know, everyone knows St. Andrews. And your first trip to Scotland's probably going to be St. Andrews, and probably should be, I think. I mean, maybe your second time there, you want to go up towards Aberdeen, we'll get to, and then, you know, Inverness is not, and the Highlands are not far away and easy to get to. The roads were easy to drive. And there's like 5 great golf courses within, you know, earshot of each other. I played 4 rounds within my first, like, I don't know, 36 hours probably being there. And it was just phenomenal world-class golf. So, yeah, Castle Stewart, fantastic place to start. Probably should have called it a day after that, to be honest. I was on 2 hours of sleep. I'd driven 3 hours, but had, you know, contacted the folks at Brora, which is about as far north as people reasonably go to play, you know, tourists go. Is that right?
Yeah, that's basically Brora's the last stop before the kind of the end of the world, it feels like, out there. And I was meaning to say, when you were speaking about the Highlands region there with all those golf courses, for people that are listening and maybe trying to convince their other half about coming over, the new initiative that Scotland has is the thing called the North Coast 500. It's 500 miles of spectacular road up in the north of Scotland, which bypasses this whole region that you're talking about. And it's to sort of replicate, it's a rip-off of the Route 500. And it's you know, for people that are maybe petrol heads or cyclists, so it's if someone's wanting to combine you know, a partner trip and golf and come to Scotland, then that's maybe a good place for them to visit as well. But yeah, I wouldn't be driving any further than Brora, but absolutely, if you're going to play Dornoch, you make the extra 30-minute drive and you hit Brora. And I'll leave you to tell everybody what happened next.
So this is where I do have to defer from kind of giving any kind of advice or whatnot and tell a personal story, because yeah, I drove, made the trip up there. I was playing with actually a couple podcast listeners, Campbell and Caleb, I met up with. And So before like we tee off, it was like the most distracting round of my life because I get, I hear through the grapevine that Phil and Bones are going to be breaking up. And I'm kind of torn up about it, to be honest. And, you know, I'm out there playing and I got a phone call from Bones asking for my email address because he wants to send me a statement. I had to act like I didn't know what was up, but obviously I knew what was up. So I knew that there was a statement coming out. So I spent the next like 45 minutes on my phone, just refreshing it, waiting for the statement to come through. And it did. And so I shared it on Twitter and, you know, there was the statement went to several, you know, media outlets, but I shared it on Twitter and it just was going nuts. And again, we were all distracted. We were all on Twitter, just kind of reading everyone's reaction. And we just continue on to the back nine. And I don't know, I was like punch drunk off no sleep and all that golf I played. We get to the 14th hole, 334 yards, and you know we kind of entertain some options on what to do. There's a little helping wind off the left, and I was like, yeah, I mean, come on, you know what I'm going to do here. And I grabbed the driver and just busted on one. And Kalen was like, you know, that's good ball. It's probably just short. I was like, I don't think that's short of anything. Like, I destroyed that ball. We look up there and... and there's no ball in front of the green. There's no ball to the right. There's no ball just past the green. And I'm kind of ready to give up on it. And Caleb goes over to the hole and looks in it and says, "Your ball is in the hole." And I did not fall for it. Like, there was no chance I was going to fall for that. I was like, no, this is what you do to visitors. Like, you're just pranking me. If I go over and look at this hole, you're going to have, like, a story to tell forever, blah, blah, blah. And honestly, it took like 20 more seconds before I finally went over and looked. And there it was, Callaway, Chrome Soft, the ball that changed the ball right there in the bottom of the hole. My first ever ace came on a par four. I entered a state of shock. I don't even, like, we shot a quick video of me getting the ball out of the hole, and my voice is like shaking. Like, I had no idea what to do. It took forever to register what had happened, and I still can't believe it actually happened. A lot of people think that I was joking with the tweet, but I actually aced a par four, first ever ace, and I still don't know how it happened.
Well, congratulations, firstly. Lots of questions. I'm sure you had lots of questions. But right on brand, of course, 334-yard par four. It had to be, right?
It had to.
Did you do the customary thing here in Scotland and buy a bottle of whiskey that would sit on the bar? Or did you do the American option and leg it for your B&B?
Well, I'm now I feel stupid. I didn't know about a Scottish tradition, but I did go into the clubhouse and offer, like, so word had already gotten back to the clubhouse that this had happened. And they were so nice about it. They gave me like a plaque, like, or not a plaque, like a poster, a framed poster of like the sixth hole. It wasn't the hole I aced. That would have been amazing. But, they gave me like a poster of Brewer, and like, I went upstairs and there was like six members and they had all heard about it. So I think they were waiting around for their drink. But I bought a round for everyone, or I told everyone next round's on me. And I don't know who ordered and who didn't. My tab was only 15 pounds. I felt like kind of ripped. I kind of felt gypped about it. Like, I felt like you're supposed to like feel it in your wallet after an ace, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I guess not at the end of the world there at Brora, when there's probably a population of 2,000 people in the village. So,
right. Yeah.
But yeah, was there much tour sauce going on there on the tee shot?
No, I think there was probably a twirl in there because I did bust on it. But no, we never saw the ball go in, obviously. I mean, 300, it's really, really far away. And it's kind of blind. And so we had no idea that the ball went in the hole. And a small part of me still thinks that one of the guys put the ball in the hole just to mess with me, which I'm hoping like 10 years from now, they don't tell me that they did that. Cause it just seems so unlikely that would go in. But
I should also note at this point, of course, that this ace was made using the Callaway Epic Sub-Zero driver. I really enjoyed the ball flight I've been getting out of this driver. The Sub-Zero head is a lower spinning head, and the ball is just trudging directly through the wind out here. I've had a little case of the hooks, but that's a me problem. That's not an Epic problem. And that ball that I found at the bottom of the cup was, of course, a Callaway Chrome Soft ball, the ball that changed the ball. I also just got my Apex Pro irons in the mail today. Can't wait to bust them out this week. Go to CallawayGolf.com for more information on all of this equipment.
On the golf course, again, it was just a super distracting round. I would love to go back out there. It was, again, an awesome night, amazing sun, just right there on the sea, like a cool breeze coming off that off the sea there. And, you know, sheep just freely roam around the property, like herding the grass. And they have electric, little tiny electric fences around the greens to keep the sheep off the greens. And it was just, it was awesome. It was like a perfect night. There's a bunch of people out there playing and kind of soaking up the rare sun up there. And it was so cool. It's not like, I was expecting it to be really raw and really not well kept, but it was not like that at all. The greens were really nice. The fairways were really good quality grass. And I mean, the layout was, it's not a big golf course. It's definitely like an old school little tiny, and not tiny, but it's old school little gym course. It's not a big grand Castle Stewart like, or King's Barnes, but I was just really impressed with the conditioning of it and how well kept it was and everything about it. I mean, I think it's absolutely 100% worth 30 extra minutes from Dornoch.
Yeah, and it's got one of the best green fees I think you probably had out there. It's like £50 a round, and for what you're getting there, you're getting a ton of history, but you're getting a really good golf course. And I think most of the courses you played on this trip, you could probably describe as fun, and Brora is certainly one of them.
Yeah, there was almost all of them. There wasn't like a taxing. Carnoustie was like a taxing, tough test. The rest of them are just like really, really fun courses. But a lot of that's dictated by the conditions and the wind and whatnot. But yeah, Brewer's fantastic. Next day I played 36 holes at Dornoch, which is basically the purpose of the trip going up there. And you know, some people claim this is the greatest golf course in the world. And I've just, again, heard so much about it. It was phenomenal. I absolutely loved it. It won't ever host an Open Championship. It just doesn't have the structure in place to host something like that. But that is one of the greatest golf course I've ever played. Incredible condition, amazing, just, you know, the big huge greens and so many like options on pin placements that just really changed the whole, so many elements of strategy into that course. And it's one of those courses that it would be super, super fun to play if you're able to get your game dialed in and really kind of I was kind of all over the map and I didn't play very well, but you know, you don't get the full challenge of it or the full, you know, thinking that you have to do on golf shots. And, you know, there's certain situations where I'd hit driver on a short par four and end up 50 yards away from the pin, but couldn't get to the pin. And I'm like, okay, I'm glad I have another round this afternoon because I know I can't do that. So, yeah. I mean, Dornoch is no secret to anyone. I mean, and there's a ton of Americans up there. I played with some in the morning. It's a common place on your route, but, man, I thought it was fantastic. Loved it. Met the hype, exceeded the hype. I want to go back there badly.
Yeah, you know, some people say that, you know, Royal Dornoch's maybe the Alex Norén of golf courses is super overrated. You know, was it Golf Digest have it number 5 in the world? But
I never said he was overrated. I never said that.
Yeah. Well, aside from that, it is a super cool spot. I think a lot of when you go and play these golf courses is, you know, you're going to play the golf course, but you're also going to sort of experience the culture, the vibe of the place. And Dornoch's very similar to St Andrews in that regard, in terms of the village there. You've got lots of restaurants and bars and other golfers that you can end up chatting to, and the golf course is like the epicenter of it all. And much of what goes on in the town has sort of came from the golf course, and obviously the history of the golf course dating back all those years. So that's a cool spot, and certainly somewhere that somebody should consider hunking down and spending a couple of days golfing in the area. Basing yourself from Dornoch.
Exactly. And yeah, I had that exact experience actually on my finishing my second 18. There was kind of a backup and I ended up playing in with a couple members, and you know, we just got to chat, and they had actually they asked me where I'd been on my trip. I was like, up at Brora, and he was like, oh, I heard somebody got a hole in one up there last night on a par 4. And I was like, you heard that? Well, that was me. That was awesome. And then we went in the clubhouse and had 3 or 4 beers with them after the round, just talking about the area and talking about, you know, tourism and trying to get more people up there and how great it would be for the town if they built another golf course up there, which I again wanted to ask you about. But just kind of got the full experience of, you know, shooting the shit with members and having a couple beers, telling stories and hearing about golf courses and soaking up the local vibe. And that's kind of something that if you, you know, if you do a buddy's trip, you might not get that. And that's why I felt so fortunate. I was up there by myself and just playing, played some holes out there by myself, but mostly was playing with somebody else. But you get that, just that extra experience of talking to locals, and man, it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. But so what do you know about this potential new course near Dornoch? I believe, is it called Cool Links?
Cool Links, yes, spelled C-O-U-L. Obviously, okay. Named after the little village there. But I really came knew about this golf course from an Alan Shipnook podcast that he had with Mike Kaiser probably 18 months ago. And at the time, I wasn't working with the European Tour. I was all in. I was working in the Scottish golf tourism industry and very keen to obviously learn about any new developments that were taking place. So I made a contact up in the Dornoch area and travelled up, and we walked the site of the proposed new golf course on a November's evening. And as I was walking across this barren landscape, two other gentlemen came across us, and one of them happened to be Mike Kaiser himself. Wow. Alongside his partner on the ground there, Todd Warnock, who owns a very nice property and now hotel in Dornoch, Lynx House, which anybody that's got the money to stay there definitely should. Super luxury and right on the first tee at Dornoch. So it was through that chance encounter that I was invited back to Lynx House in Dornoch and sat down with both the gentlemen, and they shared their vision and their plans, and I frantically drove home, wrote up the article, and before you know it, I was breaking the story of who exactly was behind the project and who the hopeful architects would be, Ben Coor and Bill Coor and Ben Crenshaw are the other guys behind it. So that was a cool chance encounter, and I think it's a really exciting project on the horizon. At the moment it's going through some planning issues. There's some environmental issues. I think talking about golf developments in Scotland is a sensitive subject, given the you know, Donald Trump's involvement down in Aberdeen and the fact that that was built on a protected site. So they're maybe facing some challenges with the golf course, but their hope and their vision is to make it a good thing for the area. So a lot of the time people drive up to Dornoch, as you experienced, and then they play the golf course and they get on their bus and they drive back to Inverness, which is about 40 minutes drive. And their vision is to keep the revenue and the tourism in Dornoch and have guys stay there for the week and play the other golf courses. So hopefully it happens. It sounds like a great project, and you know, with the guys involved and the vision they've got, I think it could be. So only time will tell on that one.
Well, that's a great story. I had not heard that whole story, but that's exactly what the member said that I was talking to. You know, it would be great to get people staying in Dornoch. And I stayed at the Dornoch Hotel, which is right close by the it's not as close as the hotel you mentioned, but it's close by the first tee. It's a dated hotel, but it was like £55 a night or something to stay there, and perfect location and just kind of all I need. I mean, for me, when I travel for golf, I don't need a big fancy hotel room. I just need a place to sleep and shower. That's pretty much it. So
yeah,
that got the job done. Usually I'm like, I'm doing it as cheap as possible. I just quit my job. I'm balling on a budget right now. So I'm in an Airbnb right now, actually near the Edinburgh airport. I have an early flight tomorrow morning, and just in a private room. And so I'm doing it on the cheap. So I try to as best I can. So, but yeah, I stayed there in Dornoch for a couple nights actually. But there's just not a lot of whole going on in the town. And I think they're thinking if they build that golf course, then that's going to kind of just totally transform that town, and people are going to stay in it, eat in it, and kind of get a different golf experience. So,
yeah.
So wait, who was saying this golf course is overrated? You mentioned that earlier. I had not heard that.
Yeah, no, just some people, like when you get there. And what I love about the podcast that I do, me and you were going back and forth on text, was the fact that rating golf courses is so subjective. There's never a right or wrong answer. So, you know, rankings aside, you know, I'm not one for them, but a lot of the time you see Dornoch up alongside your Pine Valleys and your Pebble Beach and your Old Course. So, you know, in that conversation, people, you know, do give it some some stick, but I love it. But you know, there's no right or wrong answer on that one.
So. Yeah, I agree. I'm with you, and I've said it before on here, just about, you know, people always want to know rank. How do you rank the courses? It's a foolish task, I think. My thing is like, is something worth it? Is it like an enjoyable walk? Did I have fun out there? Some people get really into the architecture. It's a part of how I evaluate a course. And you know, I really take note of some strategic elements to it, mostly just dealing with bunkers. I love bunkers on links courses, and I think that like a well bunkered course is the most fun kind of course you can play. But I don't super nerd into the architecture and whatnot. But that course just made me, like, I was just walking around the greens, looking at random pin position placements and in awe of, you know, how many different options they had and how many different ways you could play that course and the strategy elements. So I really enjoyed it. I think it's great. But again, I'm not gonna rank them all. But we'll go out of order for what I did. But then the last for that area, I think, of the main ones would be Nairn, which I skipped the first leg, but made the trip back up for. Didn't know a whole lot about it, and enough people said to me, like, you need to go check it out. Man, absolutely love that course. First of all, we had almost no wind, which I think is it was the rarity on this trip and a rarity for that property. But so it's really flat course, but I love the bunkering. Just going off what I just said, how they kind of have these raised bunkers from the fairway, so it's a perfectly flat fairway. And you're hitting over a bunker that's like a sod face bunker that's just in front of the green. I just think that it's such a cool look and design element of a course. Just have these bunkers that just pop up out of nowhere. What could you tell me about Nairn, or what is your overall experience with Nairn?
Yeah, Nairn's certainly in the bracket of these big courses, hosted Walker Cups and Curtis Cups, Solheim Cups, I believe. So they've got some pedigree there. Very old golf course. Not a place I'd probably stay. Of course, you want to visit and get to Inverness or Dornoch or Aberdeen, whatever destination region you're going to stay in for the night. But certainly worthy of a visit. I'm not mad for maybe the aesthetics of the golf course. You'll get better views elsewhere in Scotland, but we're spoilt for choice with so many golf courses. And I believe Bacon loves Nairn, and he's certainly considering membership there. So
he's talking me into it. We're both talking about it. Like I would do it. Like you say not the best views, mostly because it is just such a flat property, but those first seven holes do run right along the sea. And you walk from the parking lot out to that first tee along this walkway right along the sea. I thought that was awesome. But it is an old golf course, and so back to what I was saying about the mixture of the different types of courses you get. I just love, you know, Castle Stewart's 30 minutes away, this almost brand new golf course that's this big ballpark, big wide fairways, and then you got to Nairn. Just a completely different experience, completely different walk. Had a lot of, you know, it's tight in spots, but the fescue was, you know, findable for your ball for the most part, and you could play out of it, but it was punishing. Like, that's my favorite kind of fescue. I think that's how fescue should play it almost at all times, is if you can. I know it's really hard stuff to maintain, but I played, there was a fivesome in front of me that asked me to join them on the back nine. So I played in with five members, as a sixsome. I hope we don't get in trouble for that. But, and then Sean Burgess is the assistant pro there. He recommended to me to make sure to ask about the archive room. Have you been in the archive room there?
Shamefully, I haven't, but I have lived through your pictures and other people's pictures of the room. And Nairn, you know, like many courses in Scotland, pride themselves in the history, and Nairn probably do the best job of documenting their history there. It's it looks like almost like a museum, that little room.
It is. Oh, I want a room like this in my house in the future. It's just golf books and like all kinds of old information. They had like a membership packet from like 1912 in there, and they had just all these plaques and chairs, and like, of course, some scotch there, and a nice glass, whatever you call it, with glasses there ready to be drank. And like, my goal is to record a podcast from that room sometime in the future, maybe when me and Bacon are members. But no, I thought Nairn was phenomenal, and I kind of felt dumb after I went back and played it I felt dumb that I missed it the first time around because I kind of you can't. I mean, it's the way it works. You can't play them all usually, but it just felt like, wow, how did I not, you know, fit this into my schedule the first time through? Because I do definitely think it's a can't miss course. So
yeah. So that's you've really hit every big course in that region. You started your first week in the Aberdeen region and Cruden Bay, my home course. And I don't know if you want to share sort of the party you went with and sort of the size of group and your plans and objective.
Well, first I was going to say, did we miss any golf courses in that area that I didn't play that you would also recommend adding in the itinerary?
One course that kind of speaks to the other side of it, I talk about accessible public golf courses, affordable golf, one that's not like that, probably more like an American type experience in terms of the hospitality, is Skibo Castle, which is right next to Dornoch, and you can play public, they've got limited public tee times there of £300 per person, so it's not cheap, but it's such a great golf course, and one that I was lucky enough to play about a month ago with my co-host and good friend Graylin Loomis, who writes for Lynx magazine. So we played that, and it's you know, certainly a links golf course, something that I didn't realize it was built with, you know, a lot of the sand that is in the Moray Firth there that runs alongside, and yeah, very high-end experience, but one that if guys are wanting a high level experience and they're in Dornoch for long enough, then certainly check it out. But you've got Goldsby, you've got Fortrose, you've got lots of other options. You've got enough there for at least a week's golf. So,
and so people listening, you're welcome to ask me questions if you're planning a Scotland trip. But man, the guy you want to talk to is the guy on the other end of this phone. And this guy helped me plan Scotland 2 years ago before we'd even ever met. Was helping me plan stuff. So. If you have questions about Scotland golf travel, first of all, check out the Scottish Golf Podcast that Rue hosts as well, and shoot him any questions on Twitter. He's always willing to help, and he knows a lot more than I do. So, continuing along for the next leg of the trip, which you helped plan most of and helped put together, which was so deeply appreciated. It was absolute blast. Met up with Shane Bacon from Fox, Ashley Mayo, and several of her friends, Jeff, Tom, Patrick Koenig, Hallie Ledbetter was there. We met up to play 7 courses in 4 days. We met up at Cruden Bay, which I believe, is Cruden Bay basically your de facto home course, or what is exactly your tie there? You used to work in the pro shop there, didn't you?
Yeah, I used to have like 4 jobs in there. I used to caddy there. And now I'm just a member there. So I'm lucky. Yeah, that's where I grew up playing. And that's where I really became interested in talking about Scottish golf courses. When I was a little, like 12, 13-year-old, I would go out and play my course as normal, but I would also hear lots of voices, lots of Australian voices, American voices, and I started to wonder why people bothered to come all the way around the world to play my course.
Right.
And sort of as you grow up and appreciate golf courses, now I realize why. So
yeah. So you talk about this place all the time. I see pictures about it from it all the time. And again, it just kind of I thought it would feel like I had been there before just because of how much I've seen of it. It just goes to show how, you know, social media and Instagram and pictures and whatnot can motivate you to get to a place, but it doesn't give you an idea. It doesn't even come close to painting the picture of what it's like to be there and play it. We absolutely loved the golf course. It is stunning. There's so many awesome, cool design elements to it. Les, the general manager, was so kind. He came out and walked several holes with us. Couldn't have been a nicer guy. And, you know, telling us facts about the golf course, about, you know, they I think it was the 5th or 6th hole, they rediscovered part of an old Tom Morris green, like from the 1800s, and they extended the green to connect into that, and just incredible history in this club, and just some of the amazingly fun golf holes. I'm almost going to say this about every golf course, about it exceeding the hype, but that was, we had downwind, no winds that evening, or not much wind, and it was pretty gettable, I thought. I actually loved it so much that I went back and played it a second time in the wind. It was quite different, let me tell you that. But man, Cruden Bay, it was phenomenal. Any trip you're doing to Aberdeen area at all needs to include Cruden Bay.
And, you know, you mentioned about how you're hoping it doesn't exceed the hype. Well, on my podcast, you know, I joke, I call it the Crude Made podcast because people that I have on end up talking about it and, you know, love it so much. But Alan Shipnook, Jeff Shackelford, Matt Janella, those three guys, I think, all rate Crude Made, if not their favourite, they're, you know, certainly in their top two in Scotland. So when you've got guys like that who, let's just say they've played a lot of golf, you know, saying that and, you know, guys that know about golf courses, I think it's certainly testament to the quality of golf course that it is. And could you imagine a Scottish Open or some sort of tournament there? Again, it probably doesn't have the infrastructure, it doesn't have the hotel rooms nearby, but it would be pretty special to see that on television and seeing some of the players play it. So.
Yeah, there's so many just cool, fun holes. And I know that it gets knocked a bit. If there's ever a criticism of the course, it's the amount of blind shots. I should ask, do you hear that a lot or do you hear that as a critique?
A little bit. And again, it's subjective. I always try to educate people about the blind shots and right. If they don't like them. Like Tom Morris was building. He was walking the golf course in 1899, you know, basically with a shovel. And when somebody says, "Oh my God, there's a big sand dune there, I can't see the green," well, Tom Morris didn't have a tractor. He had a shovel. And it's just trying to like, oh yeah, right, I realize now why that's not the case, why they didn't bulldoze. It was basically people's bare hands that were building these golf courses then. They were using the natural land. It was very, you know, cost effective. Didn't have to do any shaping of the land too much, just the green sites. And, you know, I think it's just making that switch to realizing, well, they're not building the golf course with the tools available now. They're doing it in you know, 1800s, 1900s. So I like it, but I can see why somebody who's coming from the American side, you know, it's alien to them. It's very different. So I see it, but it's about embracing it. You're there, you know, these golf courses have been sustainable from that time through now. And that's, you know, built with low costs said. So it's about embracing it and not like beating yourself up. I mentioned I used to caddy at Crude Made. I was in a group with Steve Ballmer. I think he's like the eighth richest man in the world, guy behind Microsoft. And this guy, does he own a basketball team as well?
He owns the Los Angeles Clippers, yeah.
Yeah, now this guy, I've since YouTubed a lot of videos, and he is just the way he appears, just hyper. He hated Crude Made. He absolutely hated it. He was talking about walking off like from the 12th green, and I had to bite my tongue. A, because I knew who he was, but B, because I was caddying in his group. But just sort of ignorance to the fact that it's an old golf course, that was one of my favorite rounds, I think, with him. He was just he was nuts.
But that's exactly why I brought it up, is I wanted to hear that the exact explanation you gave, right? And that when you go play some of these courses, they're not always they're definitely not built in the same era as like the Castle Stewart we were talking about, in this modern era of, you know, bulldozers and able to shape land however you want it. You built around the land, you know, and that's part of what you get when you play these old courses, is that experience of, this is what this golf course pretty much looked like in the 1800s. And I know they make changes and move tee boxes around and whatnot, but that's part of the deal, is the original structure and design of these holes is the same. And that's what makes it so fun and interesting. I think, you know, going out for the second time, it was so much easier. And I don't forget who had the saying of a shot is only blind the first time you played it. Like there was so much less fear in some of the shots I was hitting the second time around, because I knew what was up there and I knew where to aim and whatnot. So maybe it is a course you need to play twice, but I mean, I just have heard that as criticism. There was not a criticism from my end, because I was A, prepared for it, and B, you know, even talked with Les about it some. He's like, this was like you just said, that's the natural use of the land. You can't just move a dune out of the way. So phenomenal golf course. Again, so good that I went back for a second time. I thought it was the best in all of the Aberdeen area. So
yeah, and it's certainly a course that, you know, I don't know if you have one of the questions about caddies, but that's one that I would probably suggest getting if you could only manage one round there and you don't have the time for two. And staying in the village there again, the Kilmarnock Arms, where I had you guys staying, you know, cool spot. You can walk to the third and fourth holes within a couple of minutes from there, and you know, walk around the village and good food and drink. So the Kilmarnock Arms there in the village is certainly worth staying at. when you're playing Cruden Bay. But then it was kind of an early start for you guys down to Carnoustie, and thankfully Colin, your driver, was up for a 6:30 start down the road in your luxury 8-seater coach, well, as you guys at No Laying Up like to travel.
That's, I wanted to talk about that next. So I had only ever done Scotland trips by car, renting a car, and that's always my advice. People just rent a car. This was my first time these 3-4 days with a rented luxury coach with a driver. I loved it. The coach was amazing. I mean, again, full disclosure, as always, there was a lot of free golf for me on this trip. But you know, there was some things, also a lot of things that were paid for, and one of them is the luxury coach, but it was totally worth it.
Can we just pause and have James Corrigan typing away frantically?
I did pay at Nairn, and I thought about tweeting at him like, great round at Nairn. Hey, Jamie, I paid today, actually. Yeah. No, a lot of the courses are very accommodating for us, and that's super appreciated. And that, and the obviously we are going to document our experiences there, share them with you guys. But as a result of that, they are able to usually arrange complimentary tea times for us. So. I don't have, and I'm going to include them in the post for all these courses about greens fee information. I don't have them all necessarily handy at the top of my head, but you're obviously much more familiar with that, so you can fill that in. But renting, having a driver and having a van for like an 8-person trip is perfect. First of all, because you probably need two cars if you definitely need two cars if you have 8 people. And you're talking about just overall relative cost and convenience of, it didn't even like feel like you're traveling. Like you're just in a, you know, you're telling stories, you're laughing, and there's 8 of you sitting around in a van. It's super nice. It's leather seats. And, you know, Colin's filling up waters and has snacks for us. Like that was a different way of doing Scotland golf travel that I had never done before. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think if you have more than 4 people, that's definitely an option you're going to want to go.
Yeah, and I don't know if Colin had Wi-Fi, but some of these coaches have Wi-Fi and the ability to sort of document your trip when you're going. And like any trip, whether it's golf or otherwise, being with the group and being able to reminisce about certain shots and spending that time together, you know, without flagging up too much about the itinerary that you chose. There was a lot of driving in there because most of your group were coming to Scotland for the first time and wanted to cram in as much as they could. So, you know, naturally, there wouldn't be so much driving between the courses, but the way it shaped up, I think taking the luxury coach option is a good way to go, especially guys on their first trips that want to maybe do a little bit more. And if you do have kind of the more than kind of 4 guys, it certainly makes it a more affordable option than you may think. So certainly worth considering.
Yes. And some people aren't necessarily that comfortable driving on the other side of the road, on the other side of the car, and some roads can, you know, just driving a different country can be a bit intimidating. So that's something that I've always said in the past, you got to rent a car, and after experiencing this, I think it is another consideration. So shout out to Colin. He was awesome. He was so much fun. So it also helped. Colin is a member at Royal Aberdeen. He used to be the club captain there and is a golfer through and through. And his excitement for our experience was cool too. Like he's out there taking photos, and it was cool to have somebody in within the experience that was a golfer and was into it, you know, and could really add to the experience. So, next morning we were up early and off to Carnoustie. Cause you mentioned a lot of driving times, but we didn't even like notice it, cause you're just in the car. You don't even like, you don't have to, you know, sketch it out on a map or worry about GPS or anything. It's all taken care of for you. So that was great. But yeah, made it to Carnoustie. I played Carnoustie 2 years ago, and I thought it was my favorite of all of the courses I played in the St. Andrews area the first time around. But again, had a nice day, and I played great. This time around, we got wet a little bit. It wasn't too bad. We got a little wet in the beginning. The wind blew strong and didn't really stop for a whole week. And I didn't play great. So I didn't walk off Carnoustie just absolutely raving about it the last time I did. I think, you know, if I can, I think we can go a little faster through something like that because, A, I think people are mostly familiar with Carnoustie, or at least, you know, this is a course that's going to be that first Scotland trip you take if you're going to St. Andrews. It's 45 minutes up the road, and it's just got to be something that you play. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, and the fact that it's probably the easiest open rota golf course to get on, it's they have some members, but you know, if you're booking in advance, you probably can get a tee time there quite easily. Certainly easier than a Royal Troon or a Muirfield or an Old Course.
Right.
So yeah, and that was another reason for my podcast and why I started doing the podcast, was to showcase these other golf courses, because there is so many Great Links golf courses in Scotland, and it seems to be the 10 or 11 that always get spoken or written about. So I think you're right. We can kind of rush over Carnoustie and, well, obviously.
At the same time, I don't want to rush over it too fast, because I feel like, you know, the first experience I had there, I should have got a caddy this time around. I got one the first time and he was awesome, just directing me around that golf course in the right way. And I, you know, I didn't have that this time around and probably should have. And I hit a couple balls out of bounds. The sixth and seventh hole were dead into the wind. Six is a par five. It's called Hogan's Alley. And just its OB runs right up against the hole. And it's so challenging into the wind. And I piped two of those out of bounds and hit another one out of bounds on the next hole. So I was just kind of in a daze after that. But it is, I mean, it's so much fun. That finishing stretch is such an incredible stretch of golf. So challenging. That 17th hole is one of the hardest holes I've ever played in the world. And I do need to comment that, first of all, I'm going to try to get Bacon on to kind of debrief from this as well. But Bacon scheduled his flight for the wrong day and missed Cruden Bay, and landed the morning of Carnoustie and had to take a taxi from Edinburgh like 2 hours to Carnoustie, and rolled up onto the course. And then on 18 in the downwind, he almost drove it into the burn. I've never seen a golf ball go that far, professionals included. Like, he almost hit it was 400 yards and almost went in the burn. But I want to save. I need to make fun of Bacon more to his face whenever I'm able to get him on. But he's a busy guy. But
that's how can you mess up your flights to Scotland? That's like Kutcher-esque or something. Oh, that is so bad.
Cruden Bay is his favorite too, and he had to miss it. So I was happy about that. I was so mad at him for screwing up his flight.
One thing to point out about Carnoustie is that it will host the Open next year.
Yep.
So was there. It's difficult. These courses play so different for you know, professional events. But what kind of golf course do you sense that you know, what player does that suit? It's obviously difficult, and last time it hosted the Open, it came up with a, you know, a strange winner, to say the least, and you know, Paul Laurie and Padraig Harrington the year after that. So yeah.
It feels tight to me at times, you know, and we're playing probably, I think we played one up tees. I don't think we played it all the way back. The conditions are going to dictate everything, just like with all these courses. I mean, when the wind was not so bad the first time around we played it, I felt it was manageable. This time the wind was howling, and it was so difficult to get your ball in the fairway. And once you're off the fairway there, you're just kind of done. But I know while I was playing it, I just wasn't picturing it as, you know, an Open championship course, or thinking about it as an Open championship course. I was so caught up in the experience of playing it. And it is totally different tee boxes and whatnot, but you know, it's kind of, I feel like a guy that just is good with a hybrid or long iron off those tees, because there's just not a ton of drivers that you need out there for those guys. I think that's something someone I think could win out there, but yeah, I haven't started thinking about the 2018 Open Championship just yet. I'm still in 2017, which I picked Koepka to win before the season, and I have to stick with it. People are going to think I'm a bandwagon jumper, but
yeah.
No, I do love Carnoustie. I would go back there for a third time and play it. I mean, it's such a fantastic test. People, you know, people call it car nasty and say it's like way too hard. I just did not. It's playable golf course. I mean, it was super challenging with the conditions we had, but it's not like an unmanageable course. It's not the most picturesque course. It's not, you know, there weren't a ton of photos taken out there, but it's a super fun experience. So
yeah.
After that, led to probably, I'm confident in saying, the most fun afternoon of golf I've ever had. I think it's a little hidden gem up there in Fife, called the Old Course at St. Andrews. We took a bus down, took our bus down there, made it, you know, 20 minutes before our tee time. Only four of us, we haven't only had one tee time there. So only four of us were able to play. We'll get to the other four. We're able to line up and play. you've talked before we tell the story, you've talked at least at length about how to get on the old course, but I talked about it on the pod 2 years ago, but you helped me with it 2 years ago when I was figuring it out, and now I feel like I've got it pretty much down. But for people planning a trip to Scotland, getting on the old course, how do you start explaining to them how to get on the old course?
Yeah, first thing I say is don't make it the be-all and end-all of your trip. Like, right. I feel like a lot of people, if they don't get an old course tee time, it kind of blows out the chance of going to Scotland. And the old course is such a draw for people that it can actually harm people coming to Scotland. Like, Ireland don't have that one course where it clogs up all the traffic and people have to go through. So if you're comparing the two, I think it's actually sometimes beneficial to have a course that's not beneficial to have a course that's clogged up with people. But I understand, it's the home of golf, everyone wants to play it. Yeah. So the four ways you can play is in the kind of fall season, you can apply an advanced reservation. So you just submit the dates you want to play on the old course, St Andrews website, so standrewslinks.com. And you can do that. And it's a ballot system. It's obviously overwhelmed with the applications, and you might have a 20% chance of getting drawn out. Failing that, your second option at this stage, about a year out or 6 months out or however long you're out, is to buy a premium tee time. It's guaranteed old course tee time, but you have to buy into a package. You have to go through a tour operator. It's going to be pretty pricey, but that way you're guaranteed an old course tee time. And for most people, that suits. The third option is just going for it. Booking your trip and leaving yourself time to hopefully get an old course tee time, which you guys did the first time you came over. It was just give yourself that time in St Andrews to go through the two different processes. So the third option would be to have the daily ballot, which is not on the day, it's 48 hours prior. And again, you submit your names, your details, and you're drawn out. Again, overwhelmed with applications, and you maybe have a 25% chance of getting pulled out, maybe 25 to 40% chance of getting out of that. And then the final option is what Ashley and other guys did, was queue up. All the other four guys that never got out on the course, and like you did last time, was just set your alarm clock for 4:30, roll up, queue up, similar to what they do at Bethpage. In the States, just basically queue up. People ask, how do you get onto the old course? And I go, you get on the old course if you want it enough. And then that morning queue allows that to happen. So you basically wait in line, the starter comes along at 6 o'clock, takes your name, and then they just go through the empty spaces, filling up with the people that woke up early enough. So I think the group that you were with were up like, and Saturday morning, 7 o'clock or whatever out on the go.
Well, so when I did it 2 years ago, I did it back to back days. We lined up sometime between 4:15 and 4:30, and we were 2 through 5 in line the first time, and then the next day, 10 college kids were in front of us, so we were like 11 through 15, and the college kids like camped out overnight. Now, I told our group like around do it around that time, but they received advice from somebody else that they needed to be there even earlier. And it turns out they did need to be there even earlier. So they lined up around 3 or 3:15 this year. And they were like, I forget, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 in line or something like that. And they got the same miracle that we got a couple years ago, and that they got a foursome off, which is almost unheard of, foursome at 7 a.m. So they got the full experience as well. So yeah, exactly what we said. If you want to play the old course bad enough, you'll get out. So so far the two times I've done it, and then with this group, like I'm considering myself 3 for 3. I didn't do it line up with them, but like the story of lining up and doing it 3 for 3, and that everyone that has gotten there early before 6 a.m. has gotten to play the old course. So it's worth it. It's cool. It's fun. Grab some coffee if there's anything. There's nowhere open. If you can make some coffee and then go. And just line up, and that's part of the experience. And you may be playing at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You can go home and nap after that, or you can go play somewhere else if you want, and you can go play the old course. So you can make it happen. It can work.
Yeah, and that's to make it happen. I think you need to give yourself like two days, 3 nights in St. Andrews, giving yourself lots of a couple of chances to get in the daily ballot 48 hours prior, and then giving yourself a couple of nights to rock up and queue and cross your fingers. So
and it's just a fun area to hang out in, even if you're not playing it. Like literally today, so I'm recording this on Monday, July 3rd. I've been on Scotland for 2 weeks. I had a free day today. I met up with some random buddies from the States, and we just went to St. Andrews today. Like we asked about the old course just by chance, any chance. They're like, no, not getting out today. And we went over and played the new course. Like the new course is fantastic. I played it 2 years ago. I didn't get to play it this time around. I love that golf course. I think it's so fun. Such a fun style of links, and people think it's new. It's like built in like 1895. Like it's still super old golf course, and it's like really fun strategic bunkering on that course, and just kind of a simple links course that is a lot of fun. So even if you go and don't get on the old course, go play Jubilee, go play the new course, and you can't not have a great time. You're still hitting at the same St. Andrews skyline, and you're still in St. Andrews playing golf. You can see the old course from there, and you're welcome to walk around the old course as well. It's a park, it's a public place, like no one's going to kick you off the golf course. So just that whole area is so special, so much fun. It's like now my fourth time going, and again, I just wanted to walk around the grounds today.
Yeah, and St. Andrews, apart from the golf, which obviously dominates the town, and it's a bit surreal seeing the old course right in the middle of town for the first time. You literally drive past it as you go into town. It's got so much else going on. It's obviously a popular spot for general tourists that come through Scotland with the old cathedral and castle, but throughout the year dominated by the university there in town as well. So it's a really vibrant, cool place to hang out as well in the evenings. And then obviously has all that golf going on as well.
Yeah, and so I forget who had the quote. So I think maybe it was Bobby Jones. Had the quote of, if you say you love the old course and you've played it less than 10 times, you're lying. I forget why that saying is, or something like, you just can't really fully appreciate it until you've really played it a bunch of times. The first two times I played it, as much as amazing as that experience was, I don't think I fully understood the golf course. I just didn't, maybe didn't have my game dialed in, and I felt like I was kind of playing from behind the whole time and just couldn't, kind of one foot over the other, tripping over myself. This time around, I feel like I got the full experience, like a late, afternoon tea time, evening round, the sun came out, the weather was pretty solid. We had a really strong wind, but it was the prevailing wind, and it was the wind that the golf course was designed to be played in. And I'm telling you, I don't think I've ever had more fun playing golf. I mean, I went out in four over and just couldn't wipe a smile off my face because there was a brutal wind into our face and off the left, the hardest wind for a right-hander. You're just trying to keep the ball on the property because all the trouble is off to the right. It was just so much fun. So the very first tee shot, Bacon hits an iron. And so I was like, oh, well, Bacon hits an iron. He's like used to caddy out here. Like he knows what he's doing. I'm gonna hit an iron. I hit an iron. I get up there and I have like 190 into number one. And my caddy's like, yeah, you probably should hit driver back there. He's like, you got to lay this up. And I was like, oh, that is not an option. I'm contractually obliged to not lay up. And he's like, I don't think you can clear the burn. And I was like, well, I'm going to try. And he was right. I hit it in the burn and made double bogey to start the round. But, the wind turned, you got to earn it. You got to get through those first nine holes. And then eight and nine played downwind, and then 10 and 11 play back into it. Once we turned back towards the clubhouse, that stretch in the evening with the sun hitting you and that downwind off the right, it's so much fun. Like, having a caddy just helps so much because, you say you end up with a shot that you have like 156 flag. Like when I'm in the States or if I'm on my own, I think 156 flag and, maybe that's a 9 iron, whatever. He's like, you have 156 flag. The wind's off your right, but you have 112 to carry the swell. That's all you want to do is carry the swell. The rest is going to take care of it, blah, blah, blah. So we're usually, maybe I would have reached for a 9 iron. I'm reaching for a gap wedge now and hitting it at the, you know, landing at 115, 120, whatever, and then watching the slope take it down to like 20 feet. And just that kind of challenge and that kind of, Brett was my caddy. Shout out to Brett, who just guided me around this golf course. And we had just the most fun. And I birdied 10, 14, 15, and 18 to shoot 3 under on the back, and just could not have been like a happier person on the planet. It was just the most fun you could ever imagine. There was like an audience gathering around 18 as we teed off, and Jigger In was going absolutely nuts for the shot Bacon hit into the road hole. And it was the best. I think I said, "This is the best," probably 20 times during that round. I've never had more fun.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned about the first time you play the old course. It's, I think the word people use is underwhelming. And yeah. It's because you don't get it. You don't get the hype. You certainly don't realize that you don't get a sense that you're in St. Andrews for the first kind of 12 holes. But then the minute you turn and you start seeing the skyline and you're playing that stretch back to the town, it's pretty special. And the double greens, the hidden bunkers, it makes a lot of sense once you've played it a number of times and you've been fortunate to play it, you know, certainly 3 or 4 times. So it's special, and you can see the lure of it. And, you know, being able to grow up in Scotland and you get to go to so many Open Championships because it's only a couple hours away. I remember at age 9, the 2000 Open, when Tiger and Monty were going at it, and one of Monty's many memorable glorious failures. It's just a special course, seeing the sort of history taking place there on a regular basis. And I'm surprised more guys don't maybe come over and play the Dunhill, which is one of the coolest events on the European Tour. You have the chance to play Carnoustie, Kings Barnes, and the Old Course twice. It's a pretty cool event, and it obviously gets you familiar with the Old Course. But
totally agree. Yeah, no, I mean it's just such a special place. There's just so many people around, like just caddies and people just out there having the time of their life, and just people make big pilgrimages to come play this golf course and get to. Honestly, it's just fun to watch people tee off and finish on 18 and clap for them, and it's just such a fun place. And then we obviously made our way to the Dunn Vegan, and had dinner and drinks there. And then the next night we ended up at the Jigger Inn, smoking cigars, having some scotch, and it's the greatest. It's just the greatest place. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. So yeah, if you ever get a chance, check out the Old Course at St. Andrews. Remember where you heard it here first. But I think we're going to have to break this into, I hope I'm not taking up too much of your night. We're going to have to break this into 2 parts, but we still have plenty to talk about. But are you still good to go?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it might be a disclaimer. You might have to put on that, you know, if anyone's bored to death, don't bother listening to the next episode.
No, people love the travel episodes, man. Yeah. It blows my mind. Yeah, like there was a week where I did a podcast, a travel podcast and a player podcast in the same week, and the travel podcast like blew the other one out of the water as far as downloads and feedback and whatnot. It's fun to, you know, talk about PGA Tour professional golf, but really, we all kind of live for our golf trips and playing at these special places. So I like hearing other feedback from other people's trips, and I love hearing information when I'm planning for one. So, yeah, people love this stuff, man, and I can't blame them. So.
Yeah, cool.
Next up was Ely. All right, so some of our group got to play. They went out and played Crail that night that we played the Old Course, which I played a couple years ago. Crail is a crazy place. Unbelievable property. It's like 1895, if I'm remembering right, that golf course was built. I didn't play it again this time around. It's what I would call like the definition of like a quirky course. Like there's just some funky little holes out there that it's probably just not the best fit for modern technology, or a course that hasn't aged great with modern technology. But unbelievable property and some incredible holes. That first 4 holes that stretch along the sea is immaculate. It's amazing, those views, and there's several other good view holes, you know, coming in as well. But what are your overall thoughts on Crail?
Yeah, Crail, when you play, they should give you a scorecard, a pencil, and a hard hat, because it's just crazy. As you say, it's crazy. You've got balls coming out, you know, from every direction. You've got shots of 4 every 2 seconds. But the observation that my buddy and co-host Graylin made when we spoke about Crail on the podcast was, Crail is literally like probably like a Shane Bacon drive away from Kings Barnes. You can kind of see parts of Kings Barnes on the other side of the coast.
Don't give Bacon that, by the way. No, don't give him that. I gave him the compliment on the drive on 18, but come on. Continue.
And yeah, so you compare the, it's the sort of same land, but obviously it's old versus new, and what the new has created at King's Barnes with the technology that, you know, golf course design allows, it creates a really, you know, expansive, wide open, like lots of long walks between holes, mm-hmm. and making the most of the land. Whereas like Crail, you feel like it's obviously predates it by 200 years, and you can tell it's like they've crammed way too many holes in the size of space allowed on the property. And it's just like interesting to think, compare the two and go, well, yeah, it's fine that you can create something modern, and but you've got the technology and the land to do it, whereas Crail has just been like, you know, they've got to do with what they've been given, the hand that they've been dealt. So it's a fun course, a nice one to maybe kick off a trip if you're wanting just to acclimatize yep. yourself with playing off the tight links turf. And, you know, as daft as and cliche as it might sound, but, you know, the sea views, the sea air, certainly the shot making and the sort of history that you feel when you're at Crail. But it's not one that you want to, it's not a big boy course that you want right. to play. There's a lot of short holes and some silly holes, but a really, you know, enjoyable first or last golf course on your trip.
And you made an interesting comment to me before we went out to play Ely, which is the next one we'll talk about, in that you just said it's important to see these courses too, right? I mean, the King's Barns are designed for the American tourists to come over and play, but seeing these historic old courses that, you know, even if some of them are quirky, is important to kind of see where the game came from and like what more normal Scottish golf is like. King's Barnes is not, you know, there's not a bunch of Scots lining up to play at King's Barnes, but Crail is like a members club that, you know, Scottish golfers go and play, and that's important to go see places like that too, and not just play necessarily the greatest hits. I mean, that's up there in greatest hits, I think, still. But Ely, a course that's hard for me to comment on, because we had the most outrageous wind I've ever played in my entire life. I've never seen anything like that. We drove it over a par four with 5 irons, and I legitimately hit a 4 iron from 100 yards at one point. I mean, it was, and the 4 iron was going backwards by the time it landed. I'm not kidding. You couldn't get the ball under this wind. I've never seen anything like it. The wind was so hard on the par three 11th. That it was blowing in from the sea. We were getting wet. The wind was blowing the waves into us as we were hitting shots. It's unbelievable. But how would you describe Ely to somebody that is not familiar with it?
Yeah, you just painted a really graphic picture there of your day, your afternoon, Saturday afternoon at Ely. But, you know, that's those types of experiences is why you come to Scotland, I guess. It's totally different golf. It's alien. Like, how often are you going to be like blown off your feet playing right. golf? And so it was a bit daft, and obviously you wouldn't be playing for any serious money against anybody on a day like that, but it's it just gives you an appreciation again of just some of these golf courses and what life is maybe was like when golf was just getting going here. Obviously the foundation of the game was created here, and Ely was one of the oldest golf courses in the world, and the home of James Braid, and a cool spot. And I found that to be one of my favorite must visit courses in St Andrews, in the area of St Andrews. It's probably a 20-minute drive from St Andrews town centre, and I think you drive past King's Barnes to get there. So it's one that I would say, if you've got the time and you've given yourself enough time, and hopefully we're going through these regions to give you an idea of the amount of golf that's available in each one. But it's about slowing down, setting up, you know, finding somewhere to stay for a week and going to play these other golf courses that right. people on a normal trip literally drive past.
Yep.
So Ely is a fun course. It's got all the views, it's got the kind of shot making qualities, and one that I am quite fond of, actually. And a quirky clubhouse, old school changing rooms. So yeah, it's one that I enjoy, and one that I've, you know, recommended to you and many others.
Yeah, no, and it was a worthwhile recommendation, definitely. But you exactly nailed it. It's not a course where I'm going to say, must be on your itinerary. It's not a must play, but if you have the time and availability to do it, absolutely go play it. And when I didn't play it 2 years ago, enough people reached out to me and said, you need to play Ely, need to play it, that I knew it was a course I wanted to play. And these mixing in these rounds, you know, along with some of the greatest hits in the big bucket list courses is important to your trip. And I think, you know, some of your most fun rounds might just be the casual rounds where you stroll out there to a course like this. So again, I'd like to see it without just biblical winds in our face. And it felt like into our face 14 of the 18 holes, I swear. And yeah, it was fun when it turned the other way for one of them. I think I like towed a drive, like a low toe that went about 400 yards on one of the holes, and Bacon hit like a 3-iron 340 yards into a bunker, and it was crazy. I've never seen anything like it. But after that was Saturday. We went over and played. We just messed around in the evening at New Course in Jubilee. Played like 12 holes or so, and then rolled over and ordered some pizza to the Jigger Inn because they stopped serving food and had beers outside, and looked at 18th and 17th at St. Andrews, and it was perfection. And then got in the car super early, and we were on the tee at 6:30 and 6:40 at Kings Barnes. Again, I debriefed on Kings Barnes 2 years ago, but I'm guessing not many people remember that exactly. But Kings Barnes is a newer course, maybe about 15 years old, if I remember right. So it's kind of in that modern design that we were just discussing. Of a big property, incredible use of the land, and just like one of the most picturesque golf courses you could ever imagine. It's so pure, it's wide, it's built like for the American tourist, I think, and you know, wide fairways and just really nice turf that you can just compress the ball against better than some other old links courses. I found it tougher this time around than I'd been the last time, if I remember right, but you can see the sea from every hole. And I mean, there's just a reason why everyone plays this golf course when you go there, and it is definitely a must do. It's a pricey one. I think it's maybe £225, one of the more expensive ones in Scotland. Is that right?
Yeah, I think £236, and it's going to go up again next year. It's going to host its first major this year. It's hosting the Ladies British. Obviously, hosted Dunhill every year. It's to give you an idea of just how busy it is. It's 10 minutes drive from St Andrews, so it's built with the US and the inbound golfer tourists to play. But you're paying your £236 per person per golfer, and we booked your trip, or we planned your trip 6 months in advance, thinking no problem, we'll get out. I contacted Alan Hogg, the chief executive there, and goes, we've got these guys coming over. He goes, oh great, we'd love to have them. Bearing in mind this is 6 months out, the only two tee times they had available was 6:30 and 6:40. So that thing is just a cash cow. It just prints money. But a really good golf course, you know, a fun course, one that is on almost everyone's itineraries, and rightly so. But it's not that Scottish old school experience. It's something very different. It's your Castle Stewarts and your Trump Aberdeens. But yeah, Kyle Phillips designed as well. So Kyle Phillips is the designer behind Dundonald, which hosts the Scottish Open next week. And of course, that's probably not on a lot of people's radars, but look out for that next week as well. So yeah, I think Kings Barnes has had enough written and said about it that, you know, I don't think I could probably do justice, but you know, interesting take there about how much money the place is making. And you know, it's obviously successful, and they keep improving things down there as well. So
I mean, that 12th hole is like my dream hole. I think it's one of the most fun holes. Downhill, tee shot, par 5, water to your left, and the green kind of, it dog legs with your second shot, so you got to take on the water with a second shot. I think it's one of the prettiest and most fun holes. I got so excited that I topped my drive this time around on it. 15th hole is like the signature hole, like a long par 3 with water on the right, the sea there, right there on your right, the super tough hole. And just it's so many good fun holes out there, and the whole structure and layout, like you said, some long walks between tees, but they use the land in the best way possible, and that's what seems to be the goal. And there's, you know, several of those fun link shots that you hit where, you know, you're landing a wedge 40 feet right of the pin and watching a slope take it down to 5 feet like you would on a normal links course. So it's a tough bullet to bite price wise, but if you're making the trip there, it's not a price high enough that you could justify saying I'm not going to play there. It's on my must play list, definitely.
Yeah, And their caddies are known to be sort of in Scotland as the best caddies, obviously drawn to King's Barnes where people are paying top dollar. You hope they're going to tip in top dollar.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how it plays the Ladies British, because we've only seen King's Barnes in a kind of amateur setting, that, you know, with the Dunhill Championship having, you know, amateurs in the field. A lot of the pin positions are, you know, pretty easy, and so I'll be keen to see how they set up the course, and maybe the sort of image of King's Barnes being nice and easy, we might see something different come this month.
Yeah, that will be interesting. They're playing the first hole is actually going to be the 18th for the Open. Yeah. Did you know that? Yeah, it's interesting, basically for crowd control reasons, but. That is going to be interesting. So there's not a lot of secrets, I don't think, there about King's Barnes, but the course that we finished this leg of the trip with, I wouldn't call it a secret. People definitely know about it, but it's kind of more of the cult favorite, much like Cruden Bay is, like you mentioned. We made the trek 2 hours down and played North Berwick, again, in crazy whipping winds. Honestly, St. Andrews aside, the most fun round I think we've had on this trip. In the first 8 holes were dead into the wind, and it felt like an absolute grind getting out there. But coming home on that back 9, there was like 4 or 5 like incredibly memorable and unique holes. The first hole is right set against the sea, and right next to the 18th hole, kind of like St. Andrews. And then you go out and you take a left in the routing. And St. Andrews, you kind of go out and take a right. But we all commented on the similarities and, you know, and how the routing kind of goes. This course sits right in a town, right against the sea, with like houses and buildings that frame the course that are so picturesque. Do you get this kind of same gushing feedback usually from people that play North Berwick?
Yeah, 100%. It's probably my favorite outlet. It's like Cruden Bay or the Oak Course for me. It's I think when you leave a golf course like a week or two later, you're still remembering every shot you hit on the back 9. Like there's so many fun holes coming home, and the similarities, as you say, with the Oak Course are pretty scary. Even that 18th tee shot, which is a little easier. It's probably easier. It's a lot shorter than the Oak Course, but like. Parked cars along the right-hand side, out of bounds, and you've got that almost, you know, valley of sin right in front of the green. So and the clubhouse, a more tasteful clubhouse in North Berwick, you know, as a backdrop. But a really cool spot, and one that if you've got the time, play 36 because you won't regret it the second time round. And the best views probably of your trip, arguably along with Cruden Bay. And you know, proper old school, like how many times do you play over a wall that guards the green? So
quick story from the front 9, and again, we're going out into this wind and I'm feeling the pressure. It's 400 yard hole the second, I think, and it's like borderline not reachable. I think Pat, our caddy, even said this is a 3-shot hole today, and he's not joking. I was determined to prove him wrong, and Smother hooked a drive so far left. I think this maybe might have been on the third hole. It was the third hole. Hit it so far left, and I saw the ball laying in another fairway. And he goes, "Is that in the other fairway?" And I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "I have never seen somebody go that far wide." He'd been a member there for like 20 years or something like that. So he's like, "Yeah, you need to just punch back out to the fairway. Don't try to do too much." So I reached my 3-wood and tried to hit it on the green, and Smother hooked another one, and I'm like 80 yards left of the green. And the wind is, again, crazy, so I take an 8-iron. So there's this wall, like the stone wall that kind of runs through the course is behind. It's to the right of the green, but for me, it's behind because I'm so far left. And I just like punch an 8-iron just to get it under the wind. It one hops. It flies the green, one hops, hits the wall, and comes back and rolls to 5 feet. And I made the par putt for like the best par of my life. So I used the wall at any time I could. I used the wall on more than one occasion to help me out. The way that course routes through those walls is one of the coolest elements of touch to a course I've ever seen. I'm obsessed with it. The hole you're talking about is the 13th, where you tee off straight down this fairway, and then the green is just on the left side of the wall. Like you got to just pitch over a wall to get onto the green. It's incredible.
Yeah, one of my probably proudest videos that I've created is with the drone at North Berwick, and it sort of gives you an idea of A, the scenery, but the kind of the walls that weave itself through the golf course. And the reason the walls are there is because it's old boundary lines for farmers and crofters, and they just haven't removed them. They've just built the golf course through them. So it reminds you of the history of the place, but it's kind of fun to navigate around and it's similar to the old course or King's Marnes. I struggled to sort of sum up in North Berwick to give it justice. It's one of the coolest spots, I think, in Scotland, and it's popular. It gets a lot of traffic now. I think it's almost became, the notoriety of the course is increasing all the time, and it is probably alongside the big names now. But it was only kind of 10 years ago where people knocked it for its quirkiness. It's certainly quirky, and quirky's often seen as a negative, but in this case, I think it's, absolutely so much fun, and one that you should play. And it's really quite close to Edinburgh as well. It's probably half an hour on the train, or just over half an hour to get to Edinburgh Airport. So it's well located, and as I said, a must play.
Yeah. So to me, quirky just means like just a feeling of uncomfortableness standing over a hole. It's like a 270 yard like non-drivable par four, or just a hole that's just kind of, you got to like hit like a 7-iron off the tee or something like that. I didn't walk away from North Berwick saying quirky. Like, I know it's different, and it's but it felt like a course that has matured really well with modern technology and didn't feel like an outdated course in any stretch. The ninth hole par five, is that right? The ninth is a par five.
Yeah.
One of the best par fives in Scotland or something like that, or top 100 par fives in the world, I think our caddy said. Such a phenomenal hole. And then you come along this, you get a helping wind coming down. Like the 12th is another cool par five. And then the 13th is the one where you pitch over the wall. 14, is that the hole? It's called Perfection. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
And like remind me again how that one plays. So I think I get that one in 16 confused.
So that one's kind of quirky in the fact that you can't really go for the green. There's not really a route onto the green,
despite it
only being like 340. You have to hit a 6-iron and then a wedge on, and beautiful backdrop. Perfection, obviously aptly named Perfection. And then the following hole is the Redan.
Yep.
The most copied hole in golf, the par three.
The original Redan. So
the original. Yeah, and then you've got 16, which is the crazy green, which you've probably seen photographed. Ashley Mayo put a great picture of her line in the middle of this crazy green that you'll never see replicated anywhere. And then you might be thinking of 17, which is kind of a longer par four, which has an elevated green with great sea views. And then you've got 18. So yeah, as I said at the start when we were talking about North Berwick, I can sort of remember every shot of that back nine, which I think is testament to the course.
And there was so much like shot value in those holes coming in that you had so much decision making and true risk reward shots. So on 14, we did we had a huge helping wind, so we did. Bacon did carry it. I didn't quite make it. I miss it. I mean, I hit a groove low, So, there was so much risk reward and so much like thought that had to go into where you wanted to land it, like how to adjust for the wind. If I lay back here, do I really want to hit 7-iron over this, or do I want to hit wedge in? And I was obsessed with that back nine. I thought it was so cool, and the houses that surround that property are just multi-million dollar beautiful Scottish houses, and right into the other side of you is the sea. I thought it was such an unbelievably fun round of golf and a perfect way to cap that leg of the trip. So
yeah, that kind of wrapped up the leg with your seven other friends and the bus. You obviously have to wave goodbye to the luxury coach at this point. You have to slum it now with a rental car, and then you take a crazy road trip around Scotland. So going back to the planning of that 8-person trip, I think logistics is difficult when you've got that many people and you've got that many tea times and hotel rooms to get. So in that scenario without somebody like myself to help, then you are maybe looking at a tour operator to just to make everything happen from a logistics point of view, but you know, certainly 3-4 guys is certainly manageable to do on your own and plan it yourself. And you know, now with Instagram and social media, there's so much there out there publicly. You know, just a tweet can get you so much information, and that's what I'd be saying to everyone listening is, you know, reach out to you and to myself and Graylin Loomis, my co-host, and scroll through Instagram locations and see all the pictures of the golf courses and click on the map and see where it is in relation to the airport that you might be flying into. And I really don't see why people are not using the resources out there to plan trips and, yeah, you know, reach out to people like us to help them plan.
And yeah, and even, you know, it's as simple as me shooting a question to you saying, I got to pick between these two, which one, I can only play one, which one am I doing? And you're like, you know what, yeah, go here. Like, it's just really helpful stuff. And I just, you know, you hear about all the courses, but you don't know where they are on a map. Like, I go around and I start, if I'm interested in a region, I just start saving golf courses in Google Maps, just give them a star, and that way I can, you know, visualize, like, all right, if I'm gonna go play here, I'm gonna want to play here too, maybe I'll stay here, and blah blah blah. And that's just kind of how I've gone about piecing it together. So but yeah, and that's where, you know, you did the legwork on getting us places to stay and whatnot, but I thought it was spaced out well. But I mean, if you're gonna play in the St. Andrews area, I mean, I would just suggest to stay in St. Andrews. You can get to so many places from there. But then, yeah, we stayed up near Cruden Bay. Like, there's so much, and then we'll get to what I did next was go up and play more in that Aberdeen area. You can stay in Aberdeen, you could stay at Cruden Bay, anywhere in that area, and you can play 4 really good golf courses within, you know, 30 minutes to an hour of driving too. So,
all right, that's it for part one. Thanks a ton to Rue for coming on. Part two should be out soon. We're going to finish up chatting with Rue, and also we are going to debrief, hopefully with Shane Bacon, about that leg of the trip, what he thought of it, and more good stuff to come. Sorry about the length of this, but been a little overdue on podcasts, so hopefully this somewhat makes up for it. But stick around. This is going to be a huge month of podcasts, and check back soon for part two. Thanks.
Be the right club.
Be the right club today.
Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect